I will let them.
Good morning. The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee to order for January 10th, 2023. There is a quorum present. Vice Chair Hewitt, may I have a motion to approve the minutes of January 10th, 2023?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes of January 5th, 2023? Seeing none, all those in favor, please vote aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 10th, 2023 are approved. This morning, our first order of business is House File 1, establishing a fundamental right to reproductive health. The testimony today will be allowed only in the manner within this committee's jurisdiction. The State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee has jurisdiction over bills that impact the powers of local units of government. Subdivision 5 of House File 1 states a limitation on the ability of local governments to regulate in the area of reproductive health. Accordingly, House File 1 is before the committee today with discussion limited by the chair pursuant to House Rule 6.21 only to the content of Subdivision 5 of the bill. Welcome, Representative Katusa Watoon, to the committee. Since Representative Katusa Watoon is not a member of this committee, the chair will move House File 1 to be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members and Minnesotans, almost 50 years ago, the United States Supreme Court assured individuals privacy and bodily autonomy in accessing reproductive health care through Roe v. Wade. In Minnesota, our privacy and bodily autonomy similarly hangs in the balance on the legal precedent of Doe v. Gomez. What happened to Roe could happen here in Minnesota, too. Over mere months, 15 states across the country have banned abortion. In this past election, voters in Minnesota and across the country spoke decisively and told us that they believe everyone should be able to make their own reproductive health care decisions. House File 1, the Protect Reproductive Options, or the PRO Act, establishes the fundamental right for each Minnesotan to make decisions about their own reproductive health care, including the right to utilize contraception, family planning and fertility supports, the right to carry a pregnancy to term, and the right to abortion. These decisions are deeply personal and private and should be made by a patient and their doctor. I will do a quick run through, Madam Chair, of the content of the bill, but as you mentioned, Subdivision 5 is what you're looking at here in state and local government. The PRO Act is a short, simple bill that will protect Minnesotans' reproductive freedom and codify our rights into law. So Subdivision 1 does establish the title Protect Reproductive Options Act. Subdivision 2 defines reproductive health care. This includes but is not limited to contraception, sterilization, preconception care, maternity care, family planning and fertility services, and counseling regarding reproductive health care. Subdivision 3 establishes the fundamental right to reproductive health care. Subdivision 4 recognizes the fundamental right to reproductive health care that's been established within the Minnesota State Constitution. And Subdivision 5 prohibits local units of government from regulating an individual's ability to exercise the fundamental rights in this section more restrictively than is set forth in this section. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to go to testimony.
Thank you. Would you like to do amendments first?
That's up to you, ma'am.
I think let's do the amendments so that we have the bill in the order that we need it to be in before we begin.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you. We have three amendments, and I think we will begin with amendment labeled the A8. Who is offering the A8?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for coming.
Representative Nadeau, please.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for coming again. It's good to see you. We've heard this bill, or I've actually heard this bill a couple of times, and I'm glad that you're back, and I'm glad that you're continuing to have the discussion, because it is an important one. I'm gonna limit my stuff to section 5 of the bill, which has to do with local gov. And you know, the heart of the bill clearly establishes that an individual has a right to, you know, have a birth, have an abortion, get the care necessary that they seem fit. Section 5, I think, goes somewhat a bit too far. In that, while it creates some confusion, while it tries to make sure that we don't overregulate, we don't do something that the state doesn't want, I think it goes a little bit too far. I think it's a little vague. So my amendment actually is the complete elimination of Section 5. It's striking the language. You know, we trust town boards, public health authorities, local units of government, city councils, county boards, to actually regulate individual rights every day, be it tattoo parlors, be it hospitals, you know, be it wastewater, offensive trades, re-housing offenders. We trust those people. We work collaboratively with local gov every day at the state level. We provide that guidance and work together. Just in Tuesday, the Commissioner of Health, I asked, what kind of trumps? Is it state policy or is it local gov as we invest in some of those efforts that we try to put so that we can, you know, change people's health behaviors? And she was clear when she stated that, you know, we work collaboratively. We look at what those goals are at the local gov because they're a little bit different as we go across the state. So I think in that vein, I think that it would be, I don't think it hurts the bill by removing Section 5. I think it's clear what this bill establishes and what it does. But right now, I think that while it's well-intended, the Section 5, I think I don't think it provides the adequate direction, nor do I think it defines enough what local gov is. Is a hospital, for example, HCMC or Hennepin Healthcare, is that part of local gov? What about county-based health plans, FQHCs? Are they part of local gov as well? Do they fall under this jurisdiction? So that's what my amendment is. It's to remove Section 5. I hope I can get your support. I hope you can come back and redefine some of those things so we can better address what we're trying to regulate. And with that, I would call for a roll call.
Excuse me, Representative Nadeau, would you like to make a motion for your amendment to be before the committee?
Sorry, I moved my motion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Cachusa-Batun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. I think you make some really good points about the critical partnerships between state and local governments. We certainly have amazing elected officials all across the state of Minnesota, and you know, to your point, that collaboration is very important. I do think that it is critical to include Subdivision 5 in the language of this bill, simply because we're creating a new fundamental right. And while there are certainly many pieces of our daily lives that our local government leaders do have a hand in, I think that I hope we can all agree that it would potentially wreak havoc across the state should somebody, you know, wake up in one city, have this fundamental right, go to work in another, not have the fundamental right, then go to another city to maybe receive any of the included services that are listed here in this bill. So I would ask members to vote no.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering, reference to the amendment, the ability of local cities to kind of regulate a variety of different businesses or operations within their city. And maybe if the staff could help us, Mr. Gehring, do city building codes apply to facilities if they are perceived to provide any medical type, you know, maybe a dentist office, general medical facility? Do city codes, do they have jurisdiction to put any city preference into those types of businesses and operations?
Thank you. Ms. Griffin?
Ms. Griffin, not Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair and Representative Kosnick, that's an area that I haven't read up on a whole lot. I'd be happy to look into the codes of that nature for you further, but I don't have a clear answer for you at this moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the response. I'm pretty certain that the local planning commissions take a look at different businesses that apply for different zoning and such in their own business, parking, screening, where they're located within their city, and cities and counties have those in their planning. And I think maybe we'll try again. Do cities have, well, no, I'll just make the point. You know, cities and local municipalities have the jurisdiction over where liquor stores are placed in their cities, where churches are located, and have to go through planning and zoning ordinances and that. To the author, you know, we also have even like food truck regulations, where they can park, where they can be located, hours of operation, that type of thing. With the abortion, apparently there's mobile abortion services that are in some areas. Would a city not be allowed to regulate where a mobile abortion facility is located within and how they operate within their city?
Representative Katisa-Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question, Representative Kosnick. I do think it's an important one because we were rather prescriptive in looking at the language in Subdivision 5, and this doesn't, the language of this bill doesn't touch on zoning regulations. Simply, it's not about business. So, I mean, I think that a city, if they, you know, if there was a clinic that wanted to provide reproductive health care services and they came to the city and said, oh, we'd like to be located here, and it was in the middle of like a residential neighborhood, I think that it would be wholly within the city's rights to say, no, that location doesn't make sense. What we're trying to avoid by the language in Subdivision 5 is, you know, potentially a city saying, this city is an abortion-free zone, and that would go too far, and that would impinge upon a Minnesotan's fundamental right to reproductive health care in this bill.
Thank you.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Representative Katisa-Watoon, I appreciate that. I understand your intent then is that a city can have some regulation over location and operation and that. And so my problem is I don't think that that's clear enough in this legislation. And it should be. And so I appreciate Representative Nadal's amendment. I think this probably needs to be clarified even further. I don't approve or endorse the overall intent of the bill to make it much more widely accessible. I think Minnesota current law and case law does protect a woman's right to have an abortion. But this bill is more extreme than what I think the average Minnesotan feels is necessary, and so I would support the amendment to take this out, and probably needs more work.
Representative Joy.
Madam Chair, thank you. Say, following up on Representative Kosnick's here, and local units government coming out of just regular coming out as a mayor and seeing this language come to my desk would be expense for the city and the county because it doesn't define exactly what Mr. Kosnick's saying, like in our planning commissions or anything like that, because we do have control of all that, and we get to decide what comes, pawn shops, anything like that. I think we need to also look at removing that out of there. So, thank you.
Representative Katisa-Watoon, do you have any response? Thank you. Any further questions to the motion? Any further discussion to this motion? Roll call having been requested. If the CLA will please take the roll.
Chair Claiborne?
No.
Claiborne, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Lead Nash?
Yes.
Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Yes.
Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
No.
Newton, no. Madam Chair, that's 5 ayes and 8 nays.
With 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. We now have before us an amendment labeled the A-10. Who is offering the A-10?
Madam Chair, I would move the A-10 and request a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Nash. A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Please proceed with your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A-10 would allow for a statutory or home rule city to opt out of this and to say local control matters. And I'm looking at the faces of some of you who have excoriated me in years past when I bring certain things and you worship at the altar of local control. You say, oh, Representative Nash, so many of your bills are so anti-local control. You're taking away the voice of the elected officials who are elected by the people that are closest to that city. So I'm giving you a chance today to put your money where your mouth is in years past and vote for local control. And as a former mayor myself in the city that I live in, we were often given the ability to make decisions that were for our city, that were reflective of the voices of the people in our city, and oftentimes did impact health decisions. And I would bring to your attention, Representative Katiza Watun, that in years past we have had home rule and charter cities, home rule charter and statutory cities, declare themselves tobacco-free cities. I think that that is an incontrovertible fact. We know that to be true. And that was a health decision that they made after speaking to their citizens, and they made that health decision. So your supposition is that they are incapable of perhaps making health decisions because that's just not something that you think is permissible. Similarly, I think that you and your caucus would support the notion of sanctuary cities as it relates to immigration. And I think that that is something that if you support that, then you should support my amendment. Because if you agree that a city should be able to say we are going to create a sanctuary for people to be immune from the immigration laws of the United States, other cities, by your support, the virtue of your support for that, you should also support the idea of other cities saying, you know, we don't want this to happen in our city. And I'll ask this question of the author. It is a unique situation for some cities, much like my own, who in the 1960s, the municipality of the city of Waconia built a hospital. So it was a municipal hospital, and it has since been moved to private ownership. But the interesting notion of this is that the city is the underlying land owner. So the hospital that sits upon the land is run by a private organization. However, the land underneath it is owned by the municipality. If the city council were to choose to create an ordinance that say we are opposed to this happening in our city, how can you say no? How can you possibly say no to that? So, Madam Chair, I do think that the A-10 addresses some absolutely prescient issues for our state. And I would remind many of you, some of you sitting over there, one looking at me right now, have absolutely ridden me like a rented mule on the virtues of local control.
We won't discuss personalities.
I'm not mentioning anyone.
Okay. Please proceed.
But I'm going to encourage you to do the right thing, to do the thing that you've set precedents for in the past, and vote yes on the A-10.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash, for the amendment and for sharing a little bit about your personal experience as a mayor previously. I love Waconia, visited many times. I think that you raise a couple good points. In previous committees, we have had discussion about, and actually to Representative Nadeau's point, I was thinking about bringing that up earlier, but then I forgot. We did have a conversation with Hennepin County because Representative New Brindley brought up the concern that HCMC is a local unit of government, but the hospital itself is not a local unit of government. It's managed by a local unit of government, so then it still does fall with under this. The main concern at that point in time Representative New Brindley was concerned that that a practicing physician or provider couldn't conscientiously object from performing an abortion, which of course is would not be the case in the text of this law. I think the biggest difference between some of the examples that you gave and the text of House File 1 is that we're creating a new fundamental right for Minnesotans. So we don't have in state statute that I'm aware of a fundamental right to for someone to smoke cigarettes. And so a city declaring itself a tobacco-free city would not impinge upon any fundamental right in law. So the PRO Act should be signed into law by the governor. Then that city would be directly in conflict with the fundamental right of every Minnesotan if they were to try to declare themselves an abortion-free zone or something along those lines. I think that, you know, it is important to consider. I think one of our former colleagues might be testifying today about a issue that the city of Prinsburg was dealing with later last year. And I think that this language in Subdivision 5 actually provides clarity to cities because there was some discussion. I think that the Attorney General's office had to reach out to Prinsburg and let them know that that proposed ordinance would have been unconstitutional. The PRO Act is simply putting into state statute existing access to reproductive health care to make those decisions about reproductive health care that are currently in place in the state of Minnesota. So I would ask members to vote no.
Thank you, Representative Katisa Watoon. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And reading the A-10 amendment, a statutory home rule charter city may by ordinance opt out of the limitations in Subdivision 5. Representative Nash, why would there be specific cities that may incur additional service demands, unique demands within the city that the city would need to maybe take a pause and prepare or think through having an abortion facility in their district? Are there other, is it unique to certain cities maybe a little bit more than others if you're by the border or something? Or how would this impact different cities?
Excuse me, Representative. Generally, questions are asked to the chair and not to other representatives. Would you like to ask a question to the chair?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think it's Representative Nash is offering this amendment. I have a question to his amendment. I think it would be appropriate to get his thinking on how that would impact.
I just want to clarify the rules. You would address the chair. Madam Chair, I would like to ask Representative Nash if, in his amendment, but all conversation goes through the chair.
Understood, Madam Chair. And if I didn't make that clear, I am going would prefer to go through you to ask Representative Nash to respond to some of those issues regarding his amendment.
Thank you very much. Representative Nash, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Kosnick's question, putting back my mayoral hat, I'm sure that there would be some things that were incurred as a result of this prohibition on local control. I would imagine that there are some costs that would be borne. If this becomes law, and I really hope that it doesn't, but if it were to become law, I think that there is a possibility that an abortion clinic might be effectively forced into a municipality that may object to that. And as we know, abortion clinics are not licensed or inspected. And I think that a city would object to having something that was unlicensed and uninspected located in their city, because it could create public health concerns and there would be a commensurate cost with that. So I think, Representative Kosnick, you're on the right track, and I hope that my colleagues on the other side agree and vote yes for this, because I do think that there are costs that are going to be borne by cities who don't have a voice in this matter anymore. And I think that the issue of, again, preemption is another issue that we get beat up by our DFL colleagues fairly regularly, who I guess find it amusing, apparently, to come after us when we propose something, but that in this case it's okay because abortion. So thank you.
Representative Katisa Batum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So two quick points of clarification. Representative Nash just said that cities don't have a say in this anymore. I think it's very important to reiterate the fact that cities already do not have this ability. The Attorney General has told the city of Prinsburg, that we'll hear about in a little while, I'm sure, from former Representative Miller, that it would be unconstitutional to do something of this sort. So we are putting this into state statute, but cities currently do not have the ability to do this right now based upon the constitutional protections of reproductive health care and freedom. All that I had to say. One clarification.
Madam Chair.
Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would ask the author if the scenario, if a city were to, if they were to regulate that any abortion facility inside of their municipality must be licensed and inspected for health care concerns, is that something that you're also claiming is unconstitutional?
I would like to remind the committee of your earlier testimony, Representative Katisa Batum, that this section pertains to individuals' rights, that the cities legislate individual rights.
Well, but Madam Chair.
Excuse me. Representative Katisa Batum, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and Representative Nash. I do think that that's also an important issue to distinguish. So while abortion facilities are not regulated or licensed, neither are dental care facilities. Practitioners, providers are licensed, and that's a really important distinction. So it's not that willy-nilly these locations are just popping up in cities and they're doing procedures on folks that without any license. I mean, these are licensed healthcare practitioners, people who have already taken an oath, who have gone through years and years of training and education in order to provide these services. And just because the building itself is not licensed, it does not make the procedures that are happening any more dangerous. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Next, we have, I have two members on this side and one on this side. So if we could please have Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's been a lot of discussion today, but I just wanted to, as somebody who also worked in local government, I just also wanted to state that there is a difference between resolutions, specifically for things like sanctuary cities. I don't know if any of my colleagues have actually read a resolution for a sanctuary city, but all it does is it is a declaration of values that they do not actually get to override federal laws on immigration. They will just not assist if should it happen, and they have the right to not do that, but the federal government and their agents are still able to actually execute their jobs within the city. And ordinances are actually law. So somebody who's actually passed ordinances and resolutions, those are very different things. And this subdivision is actually doesn't change the way local governments do their work right now. And so I would encourage our committee to our members to vote no on this particular amendment. But again, I just want to reemphasize that sanctuary cities declaration that is a declaration of values, not a declaration of what their entities within those city of governments can and cannot do or interfere with the federal government. And for us to remember that there are differences in how cities actually operate, and resolutions are not law, ordinances are within those cities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to I thought Representative Katisa Watun put it well when she said this doesn't change law, this just is referencing a fundamental right. Just to provide a few specific examples, there's no example where we give local units of government the authority to regulate related to fundamental rights. So we don't give cities or counties the authority to regulate people's right to travel between states. We don't give cities or counties the right to regulate whether or not people can have an interracial marriage. We don't give people the right, we don't give cities or counties the right to regulate who can vote based on protected classes. So this is no different than that. Courts have recognized reproductive care as a fundamental right, and this just says that cities or counties cannot regulate in that area, so I will not be supporting this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, and I don't want to belabor the point, but I was just found it interesting that what I thought I heard was the author's intent that this wasn't, this section does not intend to unregulate zoning ordinances or the ability of cities or counties to regulate themselves in terms of zoning. But in fact, when you have businesses or operations that may impact security, traffic, medical calls, police calls that may be incurred, protest, the city should be able to kind of plan for that and provide planning and zoning and regulation for that. But I'm not sure what the author kind of convoluted, whether it is regulating business and taking that opportunity away for them to plan and zone or not in her previous answer. And Representative Freiberg brought up, you know, a couple instances of fundamental rights, whether it's travel, marriage, or voting that you'd mentioned. But cities do, in fact, dictate where the voting and polling places are within their cities. They do plan out where the roads and traffic is arranged within their city and have that ability. And I think what Representative Nash's common sense amendment does is provide cities the opportunity to plan that out and to do it in an organized fashion. And so I would encourage members to support the amendment.
Representative Nash, do you have any final words before we call the vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would summarize my plea to you is, if you value local control, which apparently you do, you've reminded me of that incessantly, you would recognize that some cities may choose to not want to have this happen there. And that in the prescriptive nature of Subdivision 5, you are saying that local control doesn't matter. So with that, I would ask for your vote.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Will the CLA please take the roll?
Chair Cleavorn?
No.
Cleavorn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Lee Nash?
Yes.
Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Herr?
No.
Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Aye.
Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
No.
Newton, no.
We're not called. Madam Chair, Representative Harder was skipped.
Oh, sorry. Representative Harder?
Yes.
Harder, aye. Thank you. There's 5 ayes and 8 nays.
With a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. Next, we have an amendment labeled the A11. Who is offering this amendment?
That would be mine, Madam Chair. I would move the A11 and ask for a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Nash. The motion is before us, and a roll call having been requested, we will have a roll call. Please present your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the A10 went over so well, I think we'll try the A11. And apparently municipal government is not wise enough to choose how they wish to carry out their municipal business. So we'll see if we can bring it to the county level, kick it up a level of government. Same argument. There are counties in the state of Minnesota, all 87 of them have different elected boards chosen by the voter to do what's best on behalf of those counties. And I don't think that it will come as a revelation to many of you that the further you get away from perhaps Minneapolis and St. Paul and first ring suburbs, that the opposition to your bill, Representative Katiza-Watoon, is probably going to grow increasingly, that many people in the outstate are not on board with this bill. I think that that's reflected in the geographic location of my side of the aisle versus the geographic location of your side of the aisle. And I would argue that there are many county boards, perhaps in, as we would categorize electorally, a very red county that may wish to choose to say, you know what? We don't want this to happen in our county. And that's a perfectly reasonable, rational, I guess you don't think it's reasonable nor rational, so thank you for that. I think that there are many voters in those counties that would vehemently disagree with you. But there are people in this state that think, I would like to not have abortions to the level that you are proposing happen in my county. And if they have elected leadership that agrees and chooses to set forth an ordinance, then they should be able to do so. And the amendment that I'm offering would say a county should have that ability to do so, to create an exception to your bill, because they are closer to their constituents than you are, and that they know what the will of their constituents are better than you. So again, I've laid out the argument previously on the municipal amendment. It's effectively the same argument, but at a larger scale. I think that your bill is, I heard all election season that Republicans are extreme. We're so extreme. And that we have extreme views on abortion. Your bill is a whiptail level of extremism that I think needs to be tempered. And I think that this amendment will offer some of that tempering to allow the voice of counties to be heard. If the residents of those counties can prevail upon their county commissioners to say, nope, we're going to allow this to be opted out of. So I know I asked for a roll call, but we'll just reiterate that and make sure that that is on record, and would ask for your yes vote.
Thank you very much. I would like to remind the audience that it is very important for all representatives to be able to hear the discussion that's being presented. And while I understand that everyone in this room is very passionate about the topic of local government, I would ask that you please keep your conversations quiet, or please step to the back of the room so that all the representatives can hear the presentation that's being brought forward. And we will return that to you, that same respect to you as you testify, so that your testimony can be heard as well. Thank you very much for your cooperation in that regard. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, when the United States Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, they returned the power of deciding abortion access and reproductive freedom to the states, not to the counties.
Thank you, Representative Katiza.
I would ask members to vote no.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Lead Nash.
Well, Madam Chair, if that were to be the case that you hold so near and dear, then why do you have Section 5 in your bill?
Would you like to answer? Please, Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, while counties don't have general welfare clauses, they do have the right to regulate public health via Minnesota State Statute 145A.05. We feel that this language is necessary to clarify that reproductive freedom, per the language of the PRO Act, is outside of the scope of county regulation of public health. I would again ask members to vote no.
Thank you. And one last. Normally in committee, when the author of the amendment has called for the vote, we don't continue debate. But I would, since you're new to the committee, if you want to make one more statement, please.
All I have is a statement. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Joy.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. To echo what Nash is saying, you know, being again local
government.
Please
use the phrase representative or Nash.
Thank Representative you. Nash. I echo everything he's saying. Coming from local government and working with my county officials very close. You know, up in my area, close to we border North Dakota border, and we know where that stands. And we had decisions made in different counties, and the county regulated smoking ages before it changed. They had counties and towns that were 21 compared to 18. I think they have the knowledge and the smarts to be able to handle this. And I would appreciate everybody's vote on this as yes to get this through. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Will the CLA please call the roll?
Chair Cleavorn?
No.
Cleavorn, no. Vice Chair Hewitt?
No.
Hewitt, no. Lead Nash?
Yes.
Nash, aye. Representative Bonner?
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Berg?
No.
Berg, no. Representative Freiberg?
No.
Freiberg, no. Representative Hansen?
No.
Hansen, no. Representative Harder?
Yes.
Harder, aye. Representative Herr?
No.
Herr, no. Representative Joy?
Yes.
Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Nadeau?
Aye.
Nadeau, aye. Representative Newton?
No.
Newton, no. Madam Chair, that's 5 ayes and 8 nays.
With a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Fatiza Watoon, you have testifiers to speak to the bill. Would you like for them to come forward at this time?
Madam Chair, if it is all right with you, I'm happy to alternate the list of testifiers as signed up for the public and my personal.
So. Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Representative Fatiza Watoon. With that, I will state the name of the next testifiers. And the first one will be Hennepin County Commissioner Irene Fernando. And then we will have on deck Tim Miller. And then he will be followed by Marina Mohammed.
Madam Chair, just very quickly before testimony starts, I would like to ask for a roll call on the bill before it leaves committee.
A roll call having been requested, we will have a roll call on the bill before we leave committee. Commissioner, now Chair of the Hennepin County Commission, if you would please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Before you begin, I'd like to remind everyone that we have 2 minutes of testimony per individual. Okay.
2 minutes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Commissioner Irene Fernando. I use she, her pronouns, and serve as Chair of the Hennepin County Board. I'm the first Filipino-American elected in the state, the youngest woman to serve on the Hennepin Board, and the first person of color to serve as board chair since our founding in 1852. And these identities greatly inform my testimony today. Hennepin County is proud to speak in favor of reproductive health care and codifying into law that abortion access is a fundamental human right in Minnesota. We are the state's largest local government, and our mission is to enhance the health, safety, and quality of life for our 1.3 million residents and one-fifth of the state's population. We take this duty seriously, and that includes our birthing residents in need of abortion care. With the overturning of Roe v. Wade, Minnesota and the metro area has quickly become a national hub for reproductive access, and providers have reported material increases in requests for their services. While it's still legal in our great state, access is still financially burdensome to our most marginalized residents, and demand from out-of-state neighbors may impact access for our local residents here, who are already experiencing devastating health disparities in health outcomes. BIPOC people, people with low incomes, LGBTQ plus people, and people with disabilities continue to be disproportionately represented. The Minnesota State Health Department recently found that Black Minnesotans make up 13% of birthing people, but 23% of pregnancy-associated deaths. And while American Indian residents make up just 2% of birthing people, they represent 8% of pregnancy-associated deaths. A person's ability to access life-saving reproductive health care should never depend on their race, income, immigration status, or zip code, and Minnesota has the opportunity to lead the nation by codifying this right into law, which will create opportunities for Hennepin to support the full spectrum pregnancy care that our residents are demanding, which are culturally specific and trauma-informed. This compassionate and necessary work starts with all of you in the House. I am grateful this bill is here. I'm hopeful it is approved by the legislature and signed into law by the governor. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn, and members for your time, and thanks to the countless advocates and providers who are doing this work every single day. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Chair Fernando. Great. Thank you. Next, we will have Tim Miller, followed by Marina Mohammed, who will then be followed by Ray Parker. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tim Miller. I'm Executive Director of PLAM Action, a sister organization to Pro-Life Action Ministries. I think we should call Section 5 the Princeburg Clause, since my hometown has been singled out, but I'm not going to testify to defend Princeburg. I'm going to defend the people of greater Minnesota as a whole. I've heard repeatedly in testifying from the bill author that the election clearly stated the people support this. And yet the Senate majority flipped by one seat because of one disgruntled former House member. The Iron Range completely flipped because of this issue to pro-life. If you look geographically, 85% of the state of Minnesota geographically would be vehemently opposed to this. If you look at the polls, unrestricted, unregulated abortion, which is what this is about 9% of the people of Minnesota support that. And yet we have this one-size-fits-all bill. I think the provision points to the problem. I think the fact that this bill is speedily going through points to the problem that they want to get this passed before anyone from like the bordering counties, the bordering communities have a voice to say on this. That's where the abortion vehicles and the new clinics are going, to the borders. And what you're telling with this provision is that they have absolutely no voice on this, even though they overwhelmingly do not support it. As to the provisions of the section, members have pointed this out about the concern for county and city clinics. I think the author's wrong. I think that's going to be a problem. Building codes are going to be a problem. Local school districts, realize this, member, local school districts will have no voice as to whether an abortion vehicle shows up in their parking lot and performs abortions on students during school time. There is no control over that because of this section. One final thing, Madam Chair. I keep hearing fundamental right. You know what the fundamental right in the U.S. Constitution is? The fundamental right is to life, not abortion. It is the fundamental right for people to live their lives, not kill them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I would ask the public to please hold any opinion one way or the other. We will be respectful of all testifiers. Next, we have... Did you want to speak to them? Next, we will have Marina Muhammad, followed by Ray Parker, followed by Megumi Ryerson. If you will please identify yourself for the record and begin. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Manira Muhammad. Thank you to the chair and members of the House for listening to my testimony. I'm with the ACLU of Minnesota. That's the American Civil Liberties Union, a longstanding organization devoted to preserving our individual rights and liberties in our laws. We are here to speak in support of the PRO Act regarding reproductive health rights. This is an urgent civil liberties issue dealing with bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom. House File 1 preempts local governments from interfering with individuals' fundamental right to reproductive health and healthcare choices. This is allowed because local governments derive all their power from state law. Even home rule charters have to be in accordance with state law. The overturn of Roe v. Wade has caused a unique fracturing in policy where an individual's rights now depend on the state you live in. Having 50 states set different policies around fundamental rights is not an ideal situation, but it's the one we find ourselves in. Subdivision 5 of the PRO Act will ensure uniformity and equal access across the state for reproductive health care. It should be noted that other states like Delaware and Colorado have also recently pushed back against local governments restricting abortion rights due to state law taking precedence. Seeing as local governments are subject to state law and we are in a situation where federal protections have been removed, uniformity and consistency should be the goals. The ACLU of Minnesota supports House File 1 so that every Minnesotan, regardless of zip code, can meaningfully access reproductive health care and exercise their fundamental rights. Thank you to the chair and members of the House.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will have Ray Parker, followed by Megumi Ryerson, who will then be followed by Elisha Olson. Thank you. If you'll please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ray Parker. I'm here to address the HF1 Subdivision 5, which focuses on the local unit of government limitation, stating that a local unit of government may not regulate an individual's ability to freely exercise the fundamental rights set forth in this section in a manner that is more restrictive than that set forth in this section. Well, it sounds like your minds are made up on the HF1 bill. However, I would like clarification on the Subdivision 5 portion limiting local units of government. Are you saying that you can supersede the Constitution of the United States by ignoring and subverting each individual's right to life, such as the unborn child, but you have the right to oversee, direct, and expect subjugation of local governments? That local government, who may want to stand with the Constitution, and cannot because you deem it too restrictive and limiting. If, for instance, a city, county, or township would want to add a counseling visit to someone seeking to kill an unborn child for the purpose of checking on the welfare of that person, that they aren't a victim of rape, incest, or trafficking, and for education to the services offered both public and private to aid them in their decision-making process, that is too restrictive and could not be done by local governments per your demands in the subdivision 5 of the HF1 bill. That sounds restrictive authoritarianism and a takeover of the rights of local governments and its citizens. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will have Megumi Ryerson, followed by Elisha Olson, and then Dr. Jessup Bosek. You can please feel free to pull another chair beside if you wish. Okay.
Sorry.
Right.
My name is Megumi Ryerson. I'm the communications director at Our Justice, which is Minnesota's largest abortion fund.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Lili, and I am a board member of Our Justice, Minnesota's largest abortion fund and the oldest abortion fund in this state and in the Midwest. Our Justice began as a small group of faith leaders, clergy members, and community advocates helping refer people to abortion care before Roe v. Wade. People were dying because abortion care was illegal, and a small group of people came together to help their neighbors because it was the right thing to do. As an abortion fund, we are a crucial part of the reproductive care ecosystem. We support people in funding their abortions. In addition, we support them with logistical challenges they may encounter as they access their abortion, like transportation and lodging. In 2019, we had 628 requests for support. At the end of 2022, we had 1,300 requests. While access has always been fragile, our clients need support now more than ever. As elected officials with significant power, you have the ability to make it easier for people to access abortion. Counties and cities have already shown their commitment to access. Hennepin County will invest $500,000 to increase access to abortion, and the city of Minneapolis has a one-time $300,000 allocation this year. Subdivision 5 allows for an opportunity to create legislation that will allow localities clarity that they need to better serve their residents. Abortion is health care, and we should do everything we can to allow people access to this essential human right. This can close disparities in care and ensure our options for making decisions that are safe, affordable, and accessible. Safety, affordability, and accessibility are three minimal and extremely important cornerstones to human rights, and government should support for all individuals as they make life-affirming and powerful decisions for themselves, their families, and their communities.
Every day, Our Justice works with people who cannot access abortion care because of the cost, who cannot afford childcare or find time off work, or who think they're going to be arrested because they're getting an abortion in a state where it's legal. Elected leaders here have an obligation to change that. By passing the PRO Act, our fundamental right to bodily autonomy, as recognized by the state constitution multiple times over, will be codified into law. Specifically, preempting localities from violating the provisions set out in this bill ensures that every Minnesotan has the same right to access abortion, no matter where they live, and that the state constitution applies equally to every lawmaker. But as an abortion fund serving hundreds of marginalized people struggling to access abortion in a so-called haven state, we know that recognition of abortion access is not enough. This bill also opens up local governments to be creative and nimble in policy solutions to reproductive health care disparities, like the recent commitment from Hennepin County and the city of Minneapolis. We are in the middle of a national public health care crisis, and as a result of the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, and our laws must reflect the severity of this crisis by defending the legal right to abortion and proactively expanding access. I urge all of the lawmakers to support this bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Elisha Olson, followed by Dr. Zvosek, followed by Elena Niehoff. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Elisha Olson. I'm here today on behalf of Students for Life of America and Students for Life Action, which is one of the nation's largest pro-life youth organizations, as well as political and policy operations. On June 24, 2022, Roe v. Wade was overturned as the U.S. Supreme Court declared that the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion. It was then sent back to the 50 states to decide whether they would continue to allow the abortion industry to harm their communities. Stripping away a citizen's right to make decisions at a local level is arbitrary. If a community wants to protect their citizens from abortion violence, they should be able to do so without interference from bigwig bureaucrats. Codifying abortion is not just careless, but it's dangerous, especially since the abortion facilities actively avoid accountability, which endangers communities. We need to instead ensure that the people have a voice in whether abortion violence does not continue in their communities, and to protect the people's right to make decisions at a local level. In the words of Ronald Reagan, I hope we once again have reminded the people that a man is not free unless government is limited. There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as the laws of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We will have Dr. Zvosek, followed by Elena, and then Robin Getz. Please, Dr. Zvosek, if you'll begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for hearing my testimony. My name is Deborah Zvosek, and I urge you to support the PRO Act, including Subdivision 5. In 1973, Roe v. Wade was handed down, protecting reproductive rights. I was 14. In June 2022, after 49 years, Roe v. Wade was overturned and reproductive rights were taken. I was 62. Abortion bans were quickly passed in other states, and in November of 2022, an ordinance was proposed in Prinsburg, Minnesota, to let people sue abortion providers. The ordinance was unconstitutional and unanimously defeated in December of 2022. I was 63. More local attempts at restricting reproductive rights are sure to follow if the PRO Act is not passed in its entirety. Our neighbor, Wisconsin, is operating under a near-total abortion ban based on an 1849 law when women had no right to vote and more than 3 million Americans were enslaved. In 1849, I was minus 110. It's 2023, and we're in Minnesota, where women and girls are raped and impregnated, sometimes by family members. Lethal pregnancy complications occur and devastating fetal abnormalities. Women struggle to make hard decisions for their health and families. They don't whimsically have abortions, much less late-term abortions. And Minnesota doctors don't perform infanticide. They do their best to provide medically sound and ethical reproductive care. Our Minnesota Constitution protects individual freedom and rights to reproductive health care. Local officials and local governments must not be permitted to restrict these freedoms. This bill in its entirety is crucial. Thank you for prioritizing this issue. Please pass the PRO Act to protect reproductive rights in our state and lay critical groundwork to restore and protect the reproductive rights of women in this state and across the country. Thank you for your time and service.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will have Elena Nyhoff, followed by Robin Getz, and then Mary Ahmet, who will be on deck. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Elena Nyhoff. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of committee. My name is Elena Nyhoff. I'm going to testify in opposition to the bill HF1, including Subdivision 5. Representative Katiza, you're not creating fundamental rights. You're creating centralized control of the government, which called communism. Communism is repugnant to the American people. Communism failed in many countries, like Venezuela, like Soviet Union, like Cuba. Wake up, people. We do not want the communism. The actions of Democrat majority in the House caused grief to many parents, grandparents, and the people of faith in community. According to the Minnesota law, our children can now get a medical procedure like abortion without parental consent and any parental involvement. It's wrong.
Democrat majority in the House have no rights to push the bill to murder the unborn children on we the people. Every American protected by Constitution from the compelled speech. It means that the government cannot push the agenda which violates our conscience and our religious beliefs. It is in Constitution. Our country is the constitutional republic. If we the people decide to make the sanctuary for unborn in the place where we live, we have rights to do according to Constitution of the United States. Bill HF1 is repugnant to Constitution because it prevents people from exercise their rights. The Supreme Court decision, Marbury versus Madison, stated that a law republic to the Constitution is null and void.
I'll ask you
this bill
finish.
Is null and void.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate hearing from you. Next, we have Robin Goetz, followed by Mary Ahmet, and then our last testifier is Deborah Patzner. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Thank you.
My name is Robin Goetz, and I want to thank you all for giving us this opportunity to speak. Mm-hmm. I was told initially through my email that my topics weren't relevant, and I was praying to God that somehow I would get to speak, because I told them, okay, since my topic isn't relevant, then I'll decline to speak. But somehow my name got on the list. Thanks be to God. So I want to say that I'm nervous because I, but anyway, thank you. There's a huge majority in the suburbs, as our representatives were saying, that do not want abortion in our cities. What about our rights as citizens, pro-life citizens? You're saying that our rights don't matter. You as a group are leaders. You have the responsibility to uphold everyone's rights. You seem to be throwing our rights away, as well as the rights of the unborn children. We have a huge, huge tax base of people who do not want abortion in every city, especially on the borders. There is a lot of people leaving Minnesota because of this very radical agenda that you have, and you have to listen. I come from one of the most blessed financial cities, Deep Haven, in Minnesota, and people are outraged by what's going on. I heard yesterday, Generation Z wants abortion, they must have abortion, and they're a huge voting pool for you. Well, I'm here to tell you that there is a much huger voting pool for you financially. You need to listen to our voice. We have a voice along with those unborn children. And I want to tell you, as the young woman who just spoke, I forget where she was from, there are a lot of Generation Z people who don't want abortion in our state. I heard on Fox News that we are, only North Korea beats us in our liberal laws, allowing abortion up to 9 months.
Your time has expired. If you just want to wrap up with a final
statement. Sure. I would like to say, please, please, give us the right to choose in our cities, at least in our cities, if we must have abortion in Minnesota, give us the right to vote as individual citizens. And maybe you will get more support from pro-life people if you give us something.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. We just want to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Mary Ahmet, followed by Deborah Patzner. If you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Mary Amiot, and I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. And I just want to say I totally agree with the last speaker. I don't know who she is. I forget her name. But I want it on the record that I truly support her and others that are opposing this radical, very radical bill. My background is in nursing. I've done critical care nursing, public health nursing, home care, nursing home, a wide variety of experiences. I've also been a pro-life activist since I was in high school. My senior year in high school, I could not believe what abortion was. I didn't know till my mother told me. And I've been vehemently opposed to it because I think any child, no matter what age, really young, recognizes that a baby is a baby, whether it's in the womb kicking the mother or outside the womb. And in Roe versus Wade, I'm kind of going off my script here, but Roe versus Wade was found to be totally based on lies. And there is no fundamental right to life, or right to abortion. Our Constitution protects life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I just want to quote from my testimony here that I looked up in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and it defines health care as efforts made, this is quote, efforts made to maintain or restore physical, mental, or emotional well-being, especially by trained and licensed professionals, unquote. Abortion is not health care. Why are we calling that health care? It is the exact opposite. It's a barbaric procedure that has caused monumental pain, suffering, and death in the physical, mental, and emotional well-being of all Minnesotans. It is not a right to kill unborn children. We should not be financing harm to our citizens. Abortion destroys lives and families rather than heal and unite them. It causes excruciating pain.
Your time has expired. If you'll wrap up, please.
Okay. Mother Teresa said, prophesied, quote, the fruit of abortion is nuclear war, unquote. Violence begets violence, and yes, we have many problems in our state, but this is bad public policy to promote this extreme bill. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much. If you have handouts, if you would just give them to the page, please, and they will distribute them. Thank you. I'll ask you to state your name for the record, please, and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Patzner. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota, in Olmsted County. First, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to speak from my heart. I'm here to express my concerns in regard to the HF1 bill. The United States of America is a constitutional republic. We are all sovereign with our God-given rights. The right to life being our first and most important unalienable right. Furthermore, as a constitutional republic, we the people tell you, our representatives, what we want. It's not the other way around, Representative Katiza. When I show these pictures, what do you see? I see little human beings that have been murdered. Abortion is death. It's the murder of small, defenseless, fragile human beings. My 3-year-old granddaughter is adopted, and she's very blessed to be alive. For you see, her birth mother wanted to have an abortion when she was about 6 months along. Fortunately for Livy, and all of us who love Lily so dearly, the birth mother was past the gestational time of which the abortion could be done, according to Minnesota statute. Thank God. There are many stories like Livy's out there,
and there are thousands of couples praying for a child to adopt. My daughter is one of them. She adopted Livy, and now she has her name on the list for a sibling to adopt for Livy. For 2 years, they've been waiting. Because adoption is the loving option. We the people implore you not to support the PRO Act that you legislate in a way that protects the unalienable right to life of sweet little defenseless and fragile human beings like my granddaughter, Livy.
Thank you. Your time has expired. We appreciate the testimony of the public, and I would like to remind you that online we have in our packets, members, additional written testimony that I would encourage you to always be sure to refer to as well. Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to all the testifiers who came to share their thoughts with us today.
Is there any discussion? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I oppose this bill. Life is precious. As a former county commissioner, we desire to have the authority to have local control to make decisions based upon what our residents tell us. And this bill goes far beyond what I believe we should be doing at the state level. Every bill that you pass has some financial impact to our local residents. And I just disagree with that. I also want to mention that when my mother was pregnant with me, she was told that I was going to be disabled and it's best to terminate. My mother chose life. So I ask members here to vote against this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will express my opposition to this bill and will vote no as many times as I possibly can. And I'm disappointed that those that worship at the altar of local control have decided resoundingly, overwhelmingly, and unanimously to ignore some of their own advice in years past, and have now effectively declared that local units of government are unwise enough to be able to choose what happens inside of their units of government. I find that disappointing, but not surprising, because it is a selective, apparently, support of local control. I'll be voting no. I hope my entire side will be voting no. And I think that this is too much, too far, overreaching, and that this is an abomination. And we have seen so many times that Republicans have been called extreme. Well, folks at home watching, this is very extreme. With that, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Katiza Watun, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the discussion today. I know that we all bring different lived experiences to the table, and our testifiers have shared what's in their hearts. I think that it's really important to recognize that in those different lived experiences, I mean, this bill isn't about me. Many of the testifiers, spoke their truth, and I'm a mother of four. Three of my children are adopted out of the foster care system. I became pregnant with an unexpected pregnancy, and I'm grateful that happened. I was grateful to be in a state where I had the choice if I had to make a really difficult and different decision than I did. No one is pro-abortion, and when we talk about local control, I'm going to paraphrase Professor Nina Strominger, who's a legal studies and business ethics professor at Wharton Business School. She said something along the lines of, when Roe v. Wade, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the Dobbs decision, kicked the abortion rights decision back to the states, I say, why stop there? Why not leave it up to counties, cities, neighborhoods, or what we could do is leave it at the most possible local level of control and have it be a fundamental right for individuals to decide what happens to their own bodies. And that is what we are trying to do with the PRO Act, to make sure that every Minnesotan has the fundamental right to make decisions about their own reproductive health care. And I would ask members to vote aye.
Thank you, Representative Katisa Watoon. Seeing no further discussion, I renew my motion to recommend House File 1 be placed on the General Register. If the CLA will please take the roll.
Chair Cleavorn.
Aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Aye.
Hewitt, aye. Lee Nash.
No.
Nash, no. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Harder.
No.
Harder, no. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Herr, aye. Representative Joy.
No.
Joy, no. Representative Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Nadeau, no. Representative Newton.
Aye.
Newton, aye. Madam Chair, that is 8 ayes and 5 nays.
With 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1 is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Next, we will have a presentation by the Minnesota Sports Authority, Finance Facilities Authority. Let me say that one more time. Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. Welcome to the committee, Chair. And if you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Michael Beckich. I chair the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority. And thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you this morning. I'm here to provide an overview of the Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority and share highlights of the operation of U.S. Bank Stadium. A copy of the authority's 2022 legislative report is included in your packets. In May 2012, the Minnesota Legislature established the authority as a public body and a public political subdivision of the state. The authority is comprised of 5 board members, 3 members appointed by the governor and 2 members appointed by the mayor of Minneapolis. The authority employs 3 full-time employees, including the executive director. The authority was created in May of 2012. Its mission was to provide for the construction, financing, and long-term use of the stadium. When the venue opened in July 2016, the authority's mission evolved to include oversight responsibility for the stadium's operations and maintaining U.S. Bank Stadium as a world-class, state-of-the-art facility. As the facility enters its 7th year of operation, capital improvements continue to be a key objective to maintain, enhance, and improve this wonderful asset for the state of Minnesota. A complete list of the past year's capital improvements are included in page 6 of your packet. Also included as Exhibit 1 in our report for the authority's 2022-23 budget. Our budget includes 3 accounts, the operating account, the capital reserve account, and the concession capital account. As a point of clarification, the authority has no role in the management or oversight of the stadium reserve account, which exists within the general fund and is managed by MMB. I am pleased to report that this is the 5th consecutive year as an independent audit of the authority's financial statements earned an unmodified audit opinion. The authority's established mission reads, "We commit to creating memorable experiences through service excellence while providing a safe, world-class sports entertainment environment for all." To deliver on this mission, the authority hired SMG to manage and operate U.S. Bank Stadium. SMG, known today as ASM Global, is responsible for booking events, sales and marketing, guest services, cleaning, operations, and oversight of the stadium's 2 security contractors. Aramark was hired to provide for the food and beverage experience for all of U.S. Bank Stadium events. The authority ASM Global, Aramark, and major service providers are committed to promoting the stadium's employment and economic opportunities with proactive outreach to diverse communities and targeted businesses. These employees are paramount to the success of the operation of U.S. Bank Stadium for providing an excellent experience for our community and our guests. U.S. Bank Stadium hosts annually a wide variety of events. These events have tremendous economic benefits to Minnesota and provide a multitude of opportunities for Minnesotans to work and to play. In 2022, the stadium welcomed over 1.1 million guests at 180 individual events. Public access is at the center of the event programming at U.S. Bank Stadium. Annually, including youth sports, skating and indoor running, band competitions, and college baseball. U.S. Bank Stadium is proud to be the home of Minnesota State High School League soccer and football championships. In early 2022, the U.S. Bank Stadium supported the Minnesota Department of Health as a COVID-19 testing site. The stadium also hosted thousands of Minnesotans for a supersized Eid celebration on the stadium field. Additionally, this year, over 16,000 guests explored the facility and nearly 1,400 public, private, and educational tours. U.S. Bank Stadium has successfully hosted some of the world's largest events and attracted nationally and international talent to Minnesota. As U.S. Bank Stadium is hosting the Minnesota Vikings in its seventh season in this venue, and as you all know, a very important playoff game this Sunday. U.S. Bank Stadium has hosted four major concerts featuring some of the music industry's top artists, and we are happy to welcome back very large events year over year, including my favorite, Monster Jam, an RV show, and a home and remodeling-focused consumer show. Together with ASM Global, we are also maximizing the use of facility through booking private events in our club spaces. Among the events hosted this year was the Green Sports Alliance Summit, welcoming sports and entertainment industry leaders in sustainability. The event highlighted the environmentally friendly design and sustainability focused operation of U.S. Bank Stadium as a leader in our industry. So looking to the future, the authority continues to work closely with Minnesota Sports and Events Organization to promote U.S. Bank Stadium for large size event bids and to promote Minnesota as a community capable of successfully hosting the world's largest events. Madam Chair and members, the authority is proud of the operation of U.S. Bank Stadium and the ongoing work to preserve this tremendous asset for Minnesota. In the interest of time, Madam Chair, I'll conclude here, but I look forward to meeting with any of the individually with members of the committee. And the best part of it, I also will extend an invitation to you, Madam Chair, and your committee to come and actually take a tour of the facility and see some of the things that we're doing in the fine work. So, Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think Representative Nash likes field trips, but Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe I might be the only member of the committee elected that was here during the previous iteration of this, and I will commend you on an excellent leadership of the MSFA. You have a fine asset that you've managed well. And Mr. Vekic, I've known you for many years. I have to say I am surprised that you are a Monster Jam fan. I did not expect that, but I think that I'll just say well done on the management of this this facility, having attended both Vikings games, concerts, and state playoffs. I think it's a great facility, and I'm hopeful that we are continuing wise stewards of the stadium fund and help it continue to be an excellent venue moving forward.
Thank you.
Yes, we should take a field trip.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to let you know that I love field trips.
Oh, thank you very much for that. It builds unity in the committee. So,
Madam Chair, I think the committee is available Sunday. you can get us in there, we'll all be there. Just to say.
I would like to remind Representative Hewitt of campaign finance laws.
Well, what's going on Sunday?
Chair, would you like any closing comments before we adjourn today?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just in closing, you'll also be surprised. I do enjoy country music as another piece. So, but thank you for the opportunity here. We have a wonderful asset. I can assure you that it's fiscally managed, managed well by our partners and our partners with the Minnesota Vikings. So please come and visit us, and we'll be happy to take you on tour.
I'm sure that Administrator Rudolph will be in touch with you about that. Members, our next meeting will be Tuesday, January 17th. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.